Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malaw here on Nova M Radio. Thank you very much for... did I say Nova M Radio? Oh, my God. It's not Nova M Radio. It is Mike Malaw here on Mike Malaw Radio or whatever. Welcome to tonight's program. We do appreciate you jumping in here and joining us. A lot of craziness over the weekend. We mentioned Friday night, I think, on the program about the seeming proliferation of mass shootings around the country. And no sooner did Saturday roll around, and what do we have, two or three over the weekend? A guy kills his five children and then himself. Someone else lies in wait for cops and opens fire when they show up. And I will lay this directly at the feet of, or the microphone, I should say, of the people out there who are advocating violence based on Barack Obama's administration is going to come and grab your guns. Now, this crazy person who did the shooting in Pittsburgh and killed three more police officers who were really not there. They were there on a domestic disturbance call. The guy who did that killing, his friends have said repeatedly that this guy had listened to so much right-wing nonsense about Barack Obama coming for their guns that the guy finally snapped. I think the people on the right who are saying this in media should be held accountable. There's no way to do that, of course. They will not accept responsibility, no more than the NRA ever accepts responsibility for these killings, because right-wingers and people in the NRA are essentially cowards, as well as being cheats and liars. But especially the cowardice. That's one of the things that just is appalling to me, is the level of cowardice that exists in the right, on the right wing, and all of their attendant organizations. All the thought processes, everything is based on fear and cowardice, all of it. But it was a real bloodbath in the United States of America over the past week or so, thanks to the lobbyists from the NRA, who are, in fact, the most powerful, along with the Israeli lobby, to ever work its magic on Congress. And some of the thanks is also due to the right-wing screamers on radio and television and on the internet, who are constantly injecting ever more cowardice and fear into their right-wing followers, that somehow the Democrats are going to come for them. The Democrats. It's so crazed. It is so, so unbelievable. But if ever a right-winger were to stand up on his, and I'll say he, I'll use male pronoun, although a lot of these crazy right-wing women are just, oh, my God. Speaking of Michelle Bachmann, we'll get to her a little bit later tonight. But here in the South, if you don't live in the South, you probably have seen videos of women that you find at these Klan rallies and states' rights and white supremacists and skinhead organizations. These are some of the most cracked out, insane females that you could possibly imagine existing. And they are real. They are real. But most of the damage, they're the screamers. Most of the damage is done by the right wing cowards on radio and television and in the blogosphere, who inject more and more and more fear and additional cowardice into their followers. It is astonishing to witness. And as I started to say, I have yet to meet a right-winger or one of these people in this crazy right-wing universe who has the courage of your average 10-year-old. None of them do. They shave their heads, or they carry weapons, or they gather together paraphernalia, or they dress a certain way, trying to project an image of courage or manhood, and none of that applies. down to their stinking feet, they are cowards, every single one of them. Denis Kucinich, let's go from the absurd to the rational. Kucinich, last week, issued a statement after he voted against the congressional budget for fiscal year 2010. This was, the budget, and he voted against it. He said the following, quote, "I am committed to doing everything I can to put our community and our nation on the path to economic stability. I led the opposition to the bank bailout program TARP. I worked vigorously in favor of the stimulus package, and I have worked to save the automotive, steel, and aerospace industries in America. However, this budget is a statement of principle for the upcoming year, and I cannot accept it in its entirety. I will not vote for a budget that ties military spending to the operational funding of our government. This year, the budget includes $130 billion for war funding. The Washington Post reports today another 10,000 troops may be sent to Afghanistan, bringing our total number of troops there to as many as 78,000 by 2010, a more than 100% increase from today's troop levels. This budget is a plan that authorizes the expansion of the war. I simply cannot endorse a budget or a plan that sends more of our brave men and women to Afghanistan, a conflict which has the potential to become this generation's Vietnam," end quote. Now, that was the congressional budget, not the national budget, the congressional budget for fiscal year 2010. So how many people are left in the U.S. Congress with integrity that displays itself the way Denis Kucinich did in issuing that statement and his vote? How many are left? I've kind of lost count. At one point, there were seven or eight. Is it still that many? In total, there is nobody with any kind of integrity on the right, on the Republican side. On the Democrat Democratic side, there was at one point maybe 20 or 25, and then it was reduced to about 15, and then 10. And the last time I counted, members of the House and Senate, I'm talking about the entire Congress, that could be counted upon in the Democratic Party to vote with integrity, not on anyone's payroll or payoff, not in response to the Israeli lobby, the gun lobby, the banking lobby, the pharmaceutical lobby, the insurance industry lobby. And I came up with maybe five or six or seven people who fit that category. Is there any, other than Denis Kucinich, is there anyone else left? And that's not a challenge, that's an honest question. I have no idea. And I'm just thinking if anyone out there does have an idea, maybe you'll email me and let me know. The other thing today, of course, and I attempted to blog about it today, was the decision to allow the leaders of this country to be held responsible for the slaughter that they continue to order of our young people and our not-so-young people, and that is the allowing of cameras, video cameras, in the press to attend homecomings by dead soldiers and Marines who are dead because they were sent into a conflict that has nothing, nothing to do with defending or honoring the oath they took when they became members of the military. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy, not on Nova M or any other network, as a matter of fact.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy.
You ever notice, and this is so much the truth, how these right-wingers, Republicans, conservatives, the kind of conservative that exists now, these people never take responsibility for anything. Have you ever noticed that? That, of course, is one of the hallmarks of a coward. It's always someone else. 8 years of George Bush had nothing to do with the economy. It's Barack Obama's recession. And I mean, just on and on and on. I have yet to meet a right-winger who will take responsibility for anything. He won't even take responsibility for his own asinine attitudes about, political attitudes or his attitudes about everything. Because I have found invariably in, just in my little corner of the universe, invariably, I meet somebody who is a right-winger or a conservative, and their life is totally screwed. It really is. They have no sense of character or purpose or direction. It's really unbelievable. But again, one of the hallmarks is the utter refusal of right-wingers ever to take responsibility for anything that their policies have brought about, whether it's in their family, their workplace, their community, their country. Never will they take responsibility. And when people do step up and say, well, we made a bad decision about that war. We made a bad decision about global pollution. We made a bad decision about our economic policy. We made a bad decision about not enforcing already existing regulations where it concerns this corrupted, filthy financial services industry. Anytime someone does step up and try to take responsibility, and it's always a Democrat or a liberal or a progressive, always, there is an immediate rush from the right wing to silence that person by calling them, French or un-American or supports the terrorists or hates America or doesn't love the military, or whatever the catchphrase of the day happens to be in the this dark spider-filled world of right-wingers. But I just couldn't help but notice all of that where it concerned the insistence that those people who are being sent to die for right-wing corruption have available the video of their return in coffins to this country. George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and the rest of these rotten sons of bitches, and their sycophants, their hangers-on, their apologists have all tried to paint this as well. It's an invasion of privacy of the families, which is a goddamn filthy lie. If that is true, then immediately remove the tomb of the unknown soldier, because somewhere inside there lies the remains, so we've been told, of soldiers who died in major conflicts that we've been involved in. If there are truly remains in there, then how criminal of us to constantly parade back and forth in front of this dead soldier, dead Marine, dead airman. How criminal for people to come up and take pictures. And while we're at it, let's bulldoze Arlington National Cemetery, because the Republicans, if they were consistent in their garbage-filled lies, they would insist that showing pictures of row upon row upon row of headstone grave markers in Arlington somehow is an invasion of privacy. I can think of nothing I hate more than right-wingers. They are cowards, they are liars, they are sneaks. The only reason video cameras and the recording of people coming home in coffins, in flag-draped coffins, the only reason that was ever instituted was to save the embarrassment of the filthy leadership of the Bush crime family. both father and son. Those are the only two presidents that affected. Those were the only two. Because remember, during the 8 years of Bill Clinton, not a single American soldier died as a result of conflict. Not one. So this policy was one more policy of father and son George Bush, two hubristically insane individuals who don't give a damn about the lives of people that they send off to die to support capitalism and their interest in capitalism. It's a shame. It is truly a shame. When we come back, report here from Prairie 2. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 25 before the hour. Back on September 8th, 2005, in the New York Times, there was an article written by Alex Berenson and Timothy Williams where concerns confiscating firearms in New Orleans. Now, I've said before on this program, the only time there has been gun grabs in this country is by right-wingers, and the most recent was by George W. Bush administration, which makes the charges against Barack Obama even more insane, and the shooting of the three cops in Pittsburgh even more horrific, because the poor bastard who did the shooting insisted that Barack Obama was going to come and take away the guns, thanks to all the garbage that's put out there by right-wing talkers on radio and television. September 8th, 2005, in the Times, it says, waters were receding across this flood-beaten city today as police officers began confiscating weapons, including legally registered firearms, from civilians in preparation for a mass forced evacuation of the residents still living here. No civilians in New Orleans will be allowed to carry pistols, shotguns, or other firearms, said P. Edwin Compass III, the superintendent of police. He said, quote, only law enforcement are allowed to have weapons, end quote. But that order apparently does not apply to hundreds of security guards hired by businesses and some wealthy individuals to protect their property. The guards, employees of private security companies like Blackwater, openly carry M16s and other assault rifles. Superintendent Compass said that he was aware of the private guards, but that the police had no plans to make them give up their weapons. And the article goes on and on and on. So, you know, I got this from, who sent this to me? Justine wrote in, and she said, Mike, I forwarded the information below about confiscation of guns from law-abiding citizens under Bush and Cheney to several people over the weekend, including the New York Times columnist Charles Blow, who mentioned conservabots hawking the lie about Obama trying to take away people's guns. It was probably the only story in the so-called mainstream media that covered the gun grab in New Orleans about a week after Katrina. According to reports at that time, things were calm. The only reply to my emails was from thinkprogress.org. Justina Maryland, and then she includes an email that she sent to the columnist, Charles Blow, who I believe was on Keith Overman's program. No, I guess he was on Tweety Bird's program earlier this evening. But this is, you know, I keep coming back to the mass killings that are going on in this country, and how between the NRA and the right-wing cowards in the NRA, just filthy cowards, just filthy, stinking cowards, so eaten up by fear that they have to transmit this fear to everybody. You know, people that have no business whatsoever being afraid of anything. I am not afraid of a goddamn thing except the right-wingers who threatened my life so many times back in the early 90s that I finally wound up having to arm myself. Prior to that time in my life, you know, to me, about the only weapon I ever had was a shotgun so I could go murder pheasants and eat them the next day. But what I have found is that every single right-winger who listens to NRA or listens to Rush, and then the right-wingers who comprise the board of directors of the NRA, the spokesman for the NRA, the spokeswomen for the NRA, up to and including, or down to and including, pigs like Limbaugh and Hannity and Beck and the rest of these bastards, they are total, total cowards. Do you disagree? Do you disagree? Of course you don't. Of course you don't. It's just astonishing. Well, I can't seem to get off of that topic. I guess because of the slaughter, the ongoing mass murder that occurs in this country. Because we don't have sensible gun control. Not that that would stop it, but we don't have people out there in the world who have a microphone or a camera telling people, look, if you're going to own a gun, chill out. Nobody's going to take your gun. Nobody's going to take anything away from you. Unless you happen to live in a hurricane zone and you're under the thumb of a Republican administration, if you want to stop a potential gun grab, don't ever vote Republican again. Vote always for Democrats. Because Democrats don't do that. Only Republicans, conservatives do it. Cowardly sons of bitches. Oh, man, they turn my stomach. I don't, a sneak, a coward, and a liar. Those are the three categories of right-winger that just, it makes my skin crawl. It turns my stomach. I can't stand anyone. I don't care what their political stripe is. It just turns out that most of them are Republicans. Who is a coward, a sneak, or a liar? A coward, a sneak, or a liar. And there are a lot of Democrats, a lot of progressives, a lot of liberals who self-proclaimed who are that way. But every single conservative is that way. All of them. Starting with a liar. George writes, Mike, I'm sure you saw the video of the Taliban scumbags holding down and beating the defenseless teenage girl yesterday. The reaction I had was visceral, to say the least. At that moment, I could have easily, given the opportunity, put all three of them in the intensive care unit for a couple of weeks after removing them from the gene pool with a pair of side cutters. Seeing an act of total cowardice perpetrated on an innocent teenage girl by three bearded men for an alleged violation of their psychopathic belief system that I, being a non-believer, can't even call a religion is more than I can handle. I'm not a violent person by nature, but that is so over the line that it would temporarily make me one. And I think it just might make it more likely that these guys get shot on sight by those who are trying to rid the planet of them. Outrage has a way of doing that. Hard to believe that we share the same genetic code with these bipeds. We have our own classic cowards here, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Powell, Gonzalez, Fife, Addington, Wolfowitz, etc. Our cowards are even more cowardly because they were too cowardly to do the beatings and torturing themselves. They delegated that to others. If they're not held accountable for their deeds, maybe we deserve to end up on the trash heap of history because that makes us no better than the Taliban. George. Oh, and he includes the famous quote from Voltaire that I'm sure most of you are familiar with. Those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. Yeah, I watched that video. It was, the girl did get up after the beating of her own power and walk away. I didn't read the into the story. I think it was in the Times Online of the UK of why these religious sons of bitches were doing this to her. But the Taliban, don't forget, the Taliban essentially is something we helped to create in our insane Cold War stance against the Soviet Union. The Taliban leadership, don't forget, was invited to Houston, Texas before the attack on New York and the Pentagon. And the Taliban was wined and dined, not wined, because, of course, these sons of bitches are true believers, and these sons of bitches will not drink any wine because they are sons of bitches. Have I said sons of bitches enough? God, I hate these people. But the Taliban was romanced by Unocal of the oil company and God knows how many independent oil companies in and gas, natural gas companies in Texas, all under the firm auspices, I'm sure, of the Bush crime family. This is before Bush was elected, or this is before Bush was appointed president. And it's made very clear to the Taliban, cooperate with you. We can cooperate with you. Just cooperate with us, and we will pave your streets with gold. Don't cooperate with you with us, and we will bomb you back to the Stone Age. And, of course, the joke was they already lived in the Stone Age, so it really didn't make that much difference. But the Taliban, for whatever reason, said no to the pipeline that was to be built across Afghanistan. So, as hideous as these sons of bitches are, they fit right in perfectly with Christian sons of bitches just like them. And you can see the Christian sons of bitches all over television every Sunday morning. There they are. You can see them parading onto Larry King. Why Larry King talks with these people and gives them airtime, I have no idea. But they are of the same stripe as the Taliban. They are all religious fundamentalists who treat women as though women were what their superstitious dogma tells them women are, the cause of all evil on the planet. They're disgusting. That's all. I hadn't planned on talking about this, but so I'll stop now. I'm Mike Malloy.
Why am I so out of breath? The captain said, "Excuse me, ma'am. The species has amused itself to death."
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour, so we hear again this evening from our economics correspondent Prairie 2, who branches out a little bit tonight in his comments. He writes, "Mike, the right-wing talking heads have been going on about how Obama didn't accomplish anything at the G20 because he acts like a European and isn't aggressively promoting U.S. interests. In fact, Obama is much more forceful in his language than Bush ever even tried to be. The fact that they can understand what he's saying and believe Obama understands what he's saying is more forceful in itself. The only time Bush was aggressive in Europe was when he got fresh with the German chancellor. The economic reality, thanks to the insane trade policies of the Republicans, is that what we really have to worry about is the G2 of the United States and China. If China stops making stuff for us, for whatever reasons, we will be dependent on Europe to send us care packages to have any hope of keeping everything here from collapsing. And in a startling admission that the Cold War is actually over, the Pentagon announced a new budget cutting, many absurdly expensive and useless weapon systems. They even want to cut a carrier battle group. That still leaves 10, more than we had when the Russians still had a navy. They aren't getting too carried away, though. We still spend more than the next 25 countries combined. Remember playing the board game Risk when you were a kid? The latest paranoia from the militaristic right is that President Obama's visit to Turkey will bring back the Ottoman Empire. They've dug up old articles from the end of the Soviet Union and are running them on their so-called strategic news websites, the right-wingers are. These so-called experts were sure in the 90s that with no Soviets to keep them in check, the Turks would sweep across all the Muslim countries, controlling everything from the Mediterranean to China. And now they're sure that Obama is seeking new allies and will now empower Turkey to play out this grand plan for South Asia domination. If I roll a 6, I'm going to attack Kamchatka. I'm not sure what you mean by the end there, Prairie 2, the Kamchatka Peninsula of Russia. Why would you attack them if you roll a 6? Oh, well. Is there anything that these right-wing bloggers and paranoid geek bastards, is there anything that they can write about or talk about that has any historic sense or any basis in logic or rational thought or reason or, so Barack Obama is going to reinflate the Ottoman Empire. My goodness, that goes back, what, to the late 17th, early 18th century, mid-18th century? How, 17th century, how are they going to do that? How is Barack Obama going to do that? Oh, quick, grab your gun. The Turks are coming. The Turks are coming. How does a country, the United States, that produces such, wonderful writers and poets and a few good leaders and scientists and engineers and teachers and professors and also produce this sludge heap of right wingers and conservatives and these right wing bloggers who, I mean, how is that possible? The same society that produces a Martin Luther King Jr. produces a Wayne the Peter, Wayne LaPierre, the guy who is the chief spokes coward for the NRA. How does a society that produces a John F. Kennedy produce a David Duke? I mean, how does that happen? How does a society that produces an Edward R. Murrow also produce a piece of human waste like Glenn Beck? How does that happen? I can't seem to get my mind around that. I really can't. But Wayne the Peter, has he come out and said anything yet about this recent spate of mass killings? I haven't seen anything. I'm sure Wayne the Peter will say something very soon. Well, I call him that because that's LaPierre. LaPierre, and, you know, we don't talk the French around here if we are real men. His name is Wayne the Peter.
Mac.
What?
Guns don't kill people. People kill people, Mac.
Oh, okay. Jesus, who dragged you in?
I was just trying to throw in a little fairness doctrine there. Just.
Oh, I see, okay. All right, we are coming up on a break here fairly quickly. When we come back, I want to tell you about a Phoenix blogger whose home was raided by the police because he was critical of them. Also, Barack Obama is morphing into George W. Bush where it concerns the state secrets argument to prevent a court from reviewing the legality of the NSA's warrantless wiretapping program. Gee, the next thing you know, Barack Obama will be coming for your guns, just like George Bush, huh? Also, the highest district in Minnesota where it concerns foreclosure rates is the district represented by Michelle Bachmann. You can draw your own conclusions on that, but Michelle Bachmann has insisted that she wants nothing to do with any rescue funds. And the New York Times threatens to shut down the Boston Globe if the Boston Globe's newspaper unions don't agree to $20 million in concessions. The New York Times. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Thanks to everybody who explained to me what Prairie Two meant about if I roll a six, I'll attack Kamchatka. That was it was part of a ploy from the game Risk that Prairie Two was talking about to begin with. Well, it's Monday night. I mean, you know, it's a little bit hard for me to reconnect to Earth after the weekend. This is from, well, it comes from Chattanooga, but it's going to affect an awful lot of people. A Veterans Affairs patient who is among thousands treated with unsterilized equipment has tested positive now for HIV. The first such case reported since the Veterans Administration warned veterans they could have been exposed to infectious diseases. The VA previously reported that hepatitis had been found in 16 patients, but the agency cautioned there was no way to prove that the patients contracted the illnesses because of the treatment at their facilities. In an email that went out late Friday, the agency said it was investigating, quote, the possibility of such a relationship, end quote. What happened was the VA earlier this year had warned more than, 10,000 veterans to get blood tests because they could have been exposed to contamination while getting colonoscopies in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and Miami. And the equipment used, the endoscopic equipment in question, was also used as an ear, nose, and throat facility in Augusta, Georgia. All three sites failed to properly sterilize the equipment between treatments. Oh, my God. Hepatitis C, AIDS. This is called support for the troops, I guess, huh? Unbelievable stuff. Phoenix, this is a scary story, and it's going to get scarier when AM radio eventually becomes nothing but a huge sump hole for right-wing talk. There are a few program managers out there who are mightily resisting this. And most of them work for the affiliates that carry our programs, surprisingly. But if it comes to pass, then liberal or progressive talk is going to become an internet exercise strictly. And that's why this story is kind of spooky, more than kind of spooky. It's also spooky for liberal or progressive bloggers who work out there. But it happened in Phoenix. Phoenix police raided the home of a blogger who has been highly critical of the Phoenix Police Department. His name is Jeff Pataky, P-A-T-A-K-Y, Jeff Pataky. He has a blog site, Bad Phoenix Cops. He said the officers confiscated 3 computers, routers, modems, hard drives, memory cards, and everything necessary for this writer to continue. He's a software engineer. He said they also confiscated numerous personal files and documents relating to a pending lawsuit that he has against the police department, alleging harassment, which he says makes it obvious the raid was an act of retaliation. The search warrant was signed by Maricopa County Judge Gary Donahoe, and the warrant allowed at least 10 cops to raid Jeff Pataky's house in North Phoenix on March 12th. The cops handcuffed his female roommate for 3 hours as they tore the place apart. Jeff wasn't there. He was out of town on a business trip. He also believes the police were retaliating against him for the content of his blog, much of which comes from inside sources within the Phoenix Police Department. Apparently, according to Jeff Pataky, he has about 50 to 100 retired and active cops who provide information about corruption inside the Phoenix, or not just corruption, but also incompetency within the Phoenix Police Department. He said, they broke into my safe and took my backups, took the backups of my backups. He said, I can't even file my taxes because all my business plans are gone. They took everything. He has yet to see an actual affidavit. Jeff has. It lists in detail the probable cause of why this happened. He's skeptical that one even exists. Now, there's a little history here. The conflict between Pataky and the Phoenix Police Department began 2 years ago. This is according to Carlos Miller, who's a blogger in covering this. Carlos writes, 2 years ago, during a nasty divorce, after moving out of the house he shared with his wife, Pataky said she was not taking the divorce too well and began filing false allegations against him, accusing him of stalking her. Many of the reports she filed accused him of doing things when he was out of town, so he began filing complaints with everybody from Phoenix Mayor Phil Gordon down to Phoenix Police Chief Jack Harris, no avail. He was eventually indicted for harassing his ex-wife. All right, a month before the trial, he and a few friends launched the website as a rant against the police department. When he went to trial in May of 2008, the charges against him were immediately dismissed because lack of evidence. And he said, now, after all this occurred, we were going to shut down the website, but all of a sudden, all these good cops started hitting the site and sending us tips, he said. He said they would also deliver all kinds of internal documents from within the department exposing everything from a cop with multiple DUIs to another cop whose son was a child molester and was trying to get on the force. And this guy was eventually arrested. Police apparently believe that one of the tipsters who is providing inside information to this blogger, Jeff Pataky, is an officer named David Barnes, who fell out of favor with the department a couple of years ago when he was a detective. And he went public with claims of mismanaged evidence at the city crime lab. Police also raided former officer Barnes' home, and according to Pataky's inside sources, planned to raid the homes of more cops. Police have been extremely vague about the nature of the raids, according to the Arizona Republic newspaper. This is the sort of thing that has a tremendously chilling, if not icing, effect on people who would speak out. And it's part of this ongoing pattern in this country that dissent is to be annihilated, no matter what the dissent is about. If you are talking about government, you had better agree to the policies. If you are talking about media, you had better adopt a certain stance or you will be marginalized, no matter how talented you happen to be. If you are talking about anything, the push is on and has been on for a number of years to make you be quiet if it is not the party line, whatever the party line happens to be. And the party line is one that dovetails with whatever the corporatists want it to be. And now, of course, it's affecting the Obama administration. His Justice Department, Friday, invoked the so-called state secrets law to prevent a court from reviewing the legality of the NSA, National Security Agency's warrantless wiretapping program. And the Justice Department also moved Friday to have a lawsuit that challenged the program dismissed. And according to Raw Story, the move, which holds that information surrounding the eavesdropping program should be kept from the public because of its sensitivity. This move follows an earlier decision in March to block handover of documents relating to the Bush administration's decision to spy on a charity. The arguments also mirror the Bush administration's efforts to dismiss an earlier suit against AT&T. So Barack Obama's administration is apparently following lockstep where it concerns this issue with the Bush administration. More on this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Up against the wall. Now there's one in the spotlight. He don't look right to me. Get him up against the wall. And that one looks Jewish. And that one's a cool.
The border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Second time today, everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many kids they murdered?
About 21 past the hour. Anyway, this decision by the Obama administration to invoke the so-called state secrets privilege that allows the executive branch to keep from public view certain of its activities, it was invoked Friday. It involves a lawsuit filed by the Civil Liberties Group, Electronic Frontier Foundation. That organization is suing the NSA for the wiretapping program. Now, remember, the NSA monitored the telephone calls and emails of just countless hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people within the U.S. with no court approval, nothing. Under the guise of trying to thwart terrorist attacks, which was nonsense. It was preparing the government and the people of this country to accept quietly and with no resistance the kind of fascism that the Bush crime family was carefully imposing on all of us. In attempting to block a San Francisco court from reviewing documents relating to that program, the Obama administration is also protecting other individuals named as defendants in the suit, and they are Cheney, former Cheney Chief of Staff David Addington, and former Bush Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. And the Bush administration is also standing behind the telecom giant AT&T. And if you remember, it was AT&T whistleblower Mark Klein who revealed that the company allowed the NSA to install all this monitoring hardware to spy on American citizens. So, the Director of National Intelligence, this is according to Raw Story, the Director of National Intelligence, the Justice Department says, quote, has set forth a more than reasonable basis to conclude that harm to national security would result from the disclosure of whether the NSA has worked with any telecommunications carrier, end quote. AT&T is specifically mentioned, and public reports have fingered AT&T, Verizon, MCI, and Sprint as participating in this illegal wiretapping. Now, the guy who wrote this brief on behalf of the Obama Justice Department is Acting Assistant Attorney General Michael Hertz. And he said, he wrote, quote, the grounds for this motion to dismiss are that the court lacks, this is a federal court, the court lacks subject matter jurisdiction with respect to plaintiffs, Electronic Frontier Foundation, statutory claims against the United States, because Congress has not waived sovereign immunity, and summary judgment for the government on all the plaintiffs' remaining claims against all parties is required, because information necessary to litigate plaintiffs' claim is properly subjected to and excluded from use in this case by the state secrets privilege and related statutory privileges. So what they're saying is the Electronic Frontier Foundation cannot proceed with the suit against AT&T or any of the other telecoms or against the Cheney and Addington and Gonzalez because Congress has not waived sovereign immunity. That sovereign immunity is exactly what it is. The sovereign, the king of the United States, has immunity from prosecution. And the brief also says summary judgment for the government is required because, you know, if we were to provide the information you're asking for, ooh, the republic will collapse. That's essentially what their article, what their brief says. Now, the Justice Department, the Obama Justice Department, also holds that the lawsuit can't proceed because of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Congress expanded the wiretapping program in 2008 with a passage of amendments to the act, which gave telecom companies immunity. Remember that? Retroactive immunity for participating in the program. Obama voted for that while a senator that year. And so the Electronic Frontier Foundation fired off a scathing press release Monday that said, quote, President Obama promised the American people a new era of transparency, accountability, and respect for civil liberties. But with the Obama Justice Department continuing the Bush administration's cover-up of the NSA's dragnet surveillance of millions of Americans and insisting that the much-publicized warrantless wiretapping program is still a secret that cannot be reviewed by the courts, it feels like deja vu all over again. End quote.
I walk this floor. I used to live alone before I knew you. Yeah, and I seen your flag on the marble arch. But listen, love, love is not some kind of victory march. No, it's a
conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. You might want to go to Prairie 2's website and do the poll tonight. You go to prairie2.com. Two is numeral two. Prairie2.com. The poll tonight is, why does the right hate Obama? Is it one, a complete sentence is too much information for them? Two, they miss the color-coded terror alerts? Three, their chances of ever getting a no-bid government contract went right out the window? Or four, they just got a new brown shirt uniform with jack boots and have no place to wear it now. So go vote. Prairie2.com. That's prairie2.com. Now do this, all right? And do it right after you subscribe for the Malloy podcasts. You can do that by going to MikeMalloy.com. Scott writes in, excuse me. Under the headline, a very sad thing to finally know. Scott writes, Mike, I'm not sure if you've heard, and I have, but Professor Stephen Jones had a new peer-reviewed scientific paper published on Saturday that definitively finds unexplored microscopic thermite chips in the dust from the World Trade Center site. This is a, quote, case closed, end quote, paper for the theory that bombs brought down the towers and Building 7. This paper had about 8 co-authors, all top-notch in their fields. Interestingly, Brigham Young University, which is where Professor Stephen Jones teaches, which had previously refused to allow any work on the subject, allowed some of the analysis to be done on BYU equipment because the evidence is so overwhelming. Really sad. Please cover this story, Scott. There's not a whole lot that I can say about it. In the original a report put out by NIST, National Institute of what was that? Engineers and people who put out the conclusions that the buildings were brought down because of the impact of these airplanes and the subsequent incredible heat and stressors and so on and so forth. When they put that out, one of the questions in there, I remember, had to do with explosive material at the site of these buildings. And it was categorically stated that no tests had been done regarding the presence of an explosive like thermite. It just had not been done. And apparently now, this Professor Stephen Jones, who has been on this for the past 8 years and refuses to let it go, refuses to buy the single bullet theory, so to speak, he has published a paper now that shows the presence of thermite and explosive. And, you know, I was talking to Kathy about this during the break, and as she said, you know, what difference does it make? Nothing will ever be done anyway. The official story is the official story. It doesn't make any difference. Why talk about it? Why bring it up? I can understand that, and she's not adopting a defeatist attitude in the sense that most of us think of a defeatist attitude. It is just, you know, why keep insisting that Lee Harvey Oswald was not the sole individual responsible for the assassination of Kennedy. why keep insisting that James Earl Ray was not the sole responsible person for the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr.? Because it's extremely difficult to get the attention, the necessary attention of media to get the information out regarding any of these situations. Why is it conventional wisdom that Sirhan Sirhan, acting entirely on his own, with no Manchurian candidate style or Perelix view style control, was the only person involved in the assassination of Bobby Kennedy in L.A. back in 68. You see, we can just go on and on and on. And that's Kathy's position. You know, why keep talking about this? Those who know don't talk. Those who talk don't know is an old aphorism from our family anyway. And maybe there's some truth to that. If you know the truth, and the truth is, the whole 9/11 thing was a deliberate, conscious conspiracy on the part of the Bush crime family. And you know that to be the truth. What good does it do to talk about it? What's going to happen? Dick Cheney is going to pull the trigger on himself and say, yeah, listen, I have a confession to make. Guess what? Or George Bush, somebody's going to get him drunk and he's going to say, hey, listen, I have a confession to make. You know, so I can understand the attitude that says, how are you going to get the truth out? I don't want the 9/11 truth community to feel that this program has abandoned a belief. There's not a whole lot I can do where it concerns talking about it. Here's the truth about that. It's become a real turnoff for most radio audiences. They just don't want to hear it. Most people have moved on, just as most people have moved on where it concerns, let's go back to the Martin Luther King Jr. assassination. Yeah, that was that crazy James Earl Ray, some white racist son of a bitch who shot him. No less than King's family, though. Dexter King, and who is Martin Luther's King's son, MLK Jr., or the third, family members, right before James Earl Ray died in prison. What do you have, cancer? The family members said, you know, we don't believe this. We don't believe this at all. We don't believe that James Earl Ray, acted entirely on his own. You know, this uneducated cracker who shoots one of the leading figures of the 20th century and then somehow winds up in London a couple days later with airplane tickets and passports and you know, James Earl Ray couldn't have found a passport office any more than he could have found his ass with both hands. But you know, we're supposed to believe all this and just sit down and shut up, don't talk about it. And Sirhan, absolutely no question. No control, nothing. Killed him. That's it. End of story. And Lee Harvey Oswald, expert marksman, 3 bullets, bam, bam, bam. Perfect shot. No, sit down, shut up. You know, like, you know, Jim Garrison, somebody tries to bring up that story. Whoa, boy, are you nuts? Okay. All right. So Professor Stephen Jones has found, and I'm sure there's a perfectly logical answer, right? Well, Malloy, this has nothing to do with bringing down the buildings. This has... Really? Okay. Then fine. We'll move on. We'll move on. From the Minnesota Independent. That's the Minnesota Center for Independent Media. They did a study here of... which district, congressional district in Minnesota has the highest foreclosure rate? Because foreclosures have hit Minnesota's economy hard, like it has in you know, a lot of places around the country. It's not just the coasts or the Southwest or Florida. Anyway, it's led to a debate in that state among policymakers over how best to provide relief to the state's families. But the Minnesota Independent says an analysis of foreclosure data from across the state reveals that the crisis is worst where congressional representation is doing the least to address the issue. And guess who comes up with the worst district? It's the sixth, Michelle Bachmann. Michelle Bachmann has the highest foreclosure rate in Minnesota, her district. Now, the next highest foreclosures are Keith Ellison's, the district right next to Michelle Bachmann's, Keith Ellison being the newest representative. He just got elected. Ellison is Muslim, and you remember how the right wing went nuts on him. But Ellison, in the neighboring district, has supported or introduced more than a dozen bills to address the issue. But Bachmann, who had the most foreclosures of any of Minnesota's eight congressional districts, has refused to get involved. Bachmann's record in Congress is not one of a representative whose district faces such a crisis. She hasn't authored or sponsored any legislation to assist homeowners facing foreclosure, but she has co-sponsored 14 bills to restrict abortions and 5 to promote Christianity in government. That's Michelle Bachmann. What a right-wing, religiously sick psychopath, huh? Michelle Bachmann. Let's hear it for Michelle Bachmann, please. All right, everybody. We'll be right back.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It is about 9 minutes before the hour. We're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls now. It's 877 996-2556 is the phone number here, 877-996-2556, or 877-99-MALLOY. The New York Times Company is threatening to shut down the Boston Globe. This was from, I think, Friday, and I think, didn't you tell me today, Kathy, that they had decided to go ahead and do it? Boston Globe is dying, and that's because the Globe's unions apparently did not swiftly agree to $20 million in concessions. That's according to union leaders there. Last Thursday, executives from the Times Company made the demands in an approximately 90-minute meeting with leaders of the newspaper's 13 unions. Now, what they were asking for were pay cuts, the end of pension contributions by the company, the elimination of lifetime job guarantees now enjoyed by some veteran employees. The main sticking point was the pay cuts and the end of pension contributions. Everyone knows that the newspaper industry is struggling mightily to stay afloat, which, you know, being a voracious newspaper reader, I don't understand that, but on the other hand, yes, I do. And it's a shame. The Boston Globe, okay, so you didn't agree with them editorially all the time, but it was still, I think, a newspaper Well, in my own in my case, many, many times I have gotten information, articles, stories that were highly quotable and used as a reference point from the Globe, globe.com. The Times Company, New York Times, is also seeking concessions from the union, or was seeking concessions from the union, unions at Boston, because the New York Company, which is also suffering from the recession, can no longer subsidize the losses of the Boston Globe. And the Times Company itself posted in 2008 a net loss of almost $60 million. So what happens when the Boston Globe is gone? What happens when the San Francisco Chronicle is gone? What happens when Minneapolis Star is gone? What, you know, it's just, I don't know. Oh, well. All right, let's do some phone calls here. Veronica is calling from Dallas, Texas, listening on XM. Veronica, welcome to the program. Hey, going pretty good. How are you?
I apologize. I've got a real sore throat today, so if you can't understand me, just yell at me. I'll speak up louder.
Okay.
All right. I just want to say, first of all, it's good news. I got my Sarah Palin infection. I'm good there.
You say it again.
I want to say also that this whole, you know, wiretapping thing reminds me a lot of the McCarthyism.
Yeah.
You know, and the stupidity that they got away with, that they actually tried to try to do. And it's amazing because it's on a grander scale. It's on a grander scale. And it's amazing how we forget, you know, what happened then.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, yeah, that's true.
It's scary that they can do what they want.
Yeah, and it's a shame that the Obama administration is adopting the same stance.
It's upholding it.
Yeah.
It was illegal, and yet, suddenly we're not a nation of laws. We're a nation of, if for these people we can do this, and if for these we have to do that. You know, we have to take it. That's pretty scary.
Well, why do you suppose the Obama administration is doing what it's doing?
I don't know. Someone's pulling the string somewhere.
You think someone is telling Barack Obama what to do, or do you think that this was his plan to begin with?
I believe there's more of an agenda here than what if, and I don't want to say anything bad about Obama. I really have faith in him, but what if that the Obama administration might be an extension of the Bush crime family's administration. And if that's the case, then God has helped us, because we're going to be in a bad state. You know, think about that. And I think the world of him, I think he might be a good president. People tell me that he's a black president. Well, he's not black. Politicians are gray. Politicians have one color.
Well,
they have their own agenda. And as George Lucas might say, they're not to be trusted.
Well, okay, I understand what you know. I'm real familiar with you know, George Carlin's take on politicians, but you know, Barack Obama's race factors in, I think, Veronica, mostly to black and white Americans. I don't know to the degree to which it affects him, where it concerns his election. I would think that Barack Obama, I get the impression he has enough presence and enough self-confidence to conclude that he was the best candidate on the Democratic and Republican, both sides, going through that long primary process, that he, Barack Obama, was the best candidate, and that somehow, some way, the majority of voters agreed and elected him. Now, I realize that wasn't the full thrust of your phone call, but as far as politicians being not black, not white, but gray, if you're using that in the sense of where they stand on the issues, I want to disagree with that. I don't know that I can. We're going to take a break and come back here. So we have one open line. The number is 877-99-MALLOY. Do join us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. We understand now that the satellite launched by the North Koreans that is patriotically circling the Earth is sending back music written by the Dear Leader and the Dear Leader's father, patriotic songs about the glorious Korean workers. Of course, the no such thing is happening at all because the satellite happens to be in the bottom of the Mariana Trench somewhere in the Indian Ocean. Jesus God. I mean, you know, every time you think that your country is run by nutcases, you read something about the Dear Leader, Kim Il-Crazy or Il-Jung Nam Pung, whatever the hell this one's name is. Oh my God, this guy. And besides, he's gone completely daffy, hasn't he? I mean, I don't know if it's Alzheimer's or if it's just a syphilis of the brain. It's probably some sort of tertiary syphilis that has invaded his brain, is eating away at the gray matter.
Much like the thermite in the trade towers, we'll never know.
That's very true. We never will we? Regarding moving on, I got a couple of emails here. Then we're coming to your phone calls regarding my ironic or sarcastic statements about we have to move on. There's nothing here to see. I get this from Steve, the banker, who calls in occasionally about, he has worked in the financial services industry and he understands the horror that's out there. He writes in, I will never move on. The truth that our government stole our history, stole our lives. I will never move on. My generation died for the corporate military interests and I will never move on. Our history, our way of life is at stake, under attack for many decades, at least since 1898, if not before, but especially since 1941 or 1953 when we first overthrew a sovereign nation after World War II. I will never move on. I owe it to the dead, those we murdered in Vietnam, the kids, the grandmothers, vaporized, and those who left thinking they were defending America and learned they were killing defenseless Asians in Vietnam, Iraq or Gaza or Iran or in Central America. The blood paths of Panama, Nicaragua, Haiti, Honduras, and Guatemala, I will never move on or forget. I will never be at peace until my government cleans itself of 70 years of death and murder and killing and assassinations and putting people in prisons and denying education, jobs, and health care. The depth of corruption has resulted in a government out of control and unable to respond to the Constitution and honesty and justice. I will never give up. Or move on. Ever. Steve the banker. I hear you, pal. I hear you. In that sense, of course, neither will I. Neither will most of the people who listen to this program. The rest of the world, of course, or the rest of this country has long ago moved on. Reg writes in, why keep talking about 9/11? Simply because the Internet is quickly replacing the so-called mainstream media as a source of information for more and more Americans. The 9/11 truth movement has been working tirelessly since the attacks and has been able to reach millions of people everywhere who come upon the evidence, such as that of Professor Jones' work, with amazement, and continue to do more and more research on their own to unearth the truth. Google 9/11 facts, and you come up with more than 7 million references, 7 million sites. What is rarely mentioned is that Professor Jones is a Republican who voted twice for George Bush. When he did his original experiments in 2005, he presented his findings at Brigham Young University, one that is about as conservative as any in this country. And yet the university could not accommodate the huge number of students who turned out to hear him speak on his findings, that the attacks had to have been an inside job. They had to open adjoining rooms to pipe in the message as Professor Jones read his paper to the group. But Jones is only one of thousands who've spoken out. PatriotsQuestion911.com is an amazing site that features professionals, including academics, scientists, politicians, entertainers, engineers, pilots, military officers, and others, who have made public statements about the need to expose the truth. Please don't let it go as a useless effort. It may be, but it will be useless if our voices stop. Reg. And there's nothing I can add to either one of those two emails. I hear both loud and clear. Did you see the little bit of tape or a video? I keep calling it tape, and it's not tape. Little bit of video that has, it's, you know, digitized video. It's just an expression. Every time I say, did you see the tape? My son, if he happens to hear me, says, Jesus Christ, Dad. Okay. The digitized video of Barack Obama at a press conference in Turkey, who rebuked the old lie that the United States is a Judeo-Christian nation. And boy, isn't the fundamentalist right in this country, the Christian right, I think the Muslims and the Jews will just yawn and say, well, yeah, okay. But the fundamentalist Christians are just going to have apoplexy over this one. Or as my sister used to say, they're going to have a cow. Here's what he said, quote, one of the great strengths of the United States is we have a very large Christian population, but we do not consider ourselves a Christian nation or a Jewish nation or a Muslim nation. We consider ourselves a nation of citizens who are bound by ideals and a set of values, end quote. I can see the Christian soldiers girding their loins already, huh? Can't you? Can't you just see this? We're not a Christian nation, huh? Oh, my God, it just won't stop, will it? Back to your phone calls. Tom is calling from Marietta, Georgia, listening online. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I'm one of the people that has to listen to you to calm down. I mean, I was telling Kathy, I heard you talk about your brother the other night and how he was an artist. It was very touching. I'm also an artist. I'm 46 years old, and I had a very strange thing happened to me on the internet last night.
Oh, yeah?
Censorship by Craigslist. And it was a painting of George Bush. It's an encaustic oil painting that was entitled George Bush Equals War Devil. And I posted it in Germany last week, and it was fine. I got a couple nasty comments. One lady said, your picture is despicable and should be removed. That's fine. That's what I expected.
Mm-hmm.
So I posted in every major city in the country last night except for the redneck cities like Atlanta and Cincinnati and all.
Mm-hmm.
And I expected to get a bunch of hate mail and everything. And much to my chagrin, they omitted it from every site and suspended my my rights to have an account with them. And they have given me no explanation. And all the filth they put on that thing, it was under the art for sale. An original piece of artwork. It's terrifying. I mean, if I showed it to Molly, she'd probably scream, but that's the purpose of it. And I just wanted to let you know, and thank you for letting me speak.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I'm very upset by the censorship.
Well, I would think so. You know, the first thing they go for are the artists and the poets, always.
Yeah, flagging is fine, but when somebody within their organization, I mean, there's a bunch of Republican liars that probably said I was posting a photo of a child being molested or something, but this was it was based on his official portrait. An encaustic oil painting is oil paint mixed with wax, so it has a very impasto, so there's blood that looks like real blood, and it is a very strong piece. And believe me, I'm a true artist. That drawing, that painting will reappear. And if you or Bob Alexander or anyone wants it, it's yours. I'll be glad to get it.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Why
don't you email a copy of that to me? And
I told Kathy I tried to send you a picture of it through Nova M, and I guess they botched it like they did everything.
Oh, don't go through. Yeah, don't go through Nova M. Just
send. Well, I just really respect your privacy, and I'm not very computer literate, but I'll get it to you or Bob because it obviously upset a ton of people, which was its intent, but. The fact that people, look, it's an image.
Right.
An image of a president who was a buffoon, who brought the world down, who has millions of...
Well, if you can get me an image that we can get up on our website, we'll put it up. We'll definitely.
I'll be glad to do.
All right.
I can help.
All right.
And you keep up the good work, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you so much.
All right, man. Take it easy. Yeah. If they get it to us, we'll post it at MikeMolloy.com. We'll be right back.
Justify murder by the fight of the fever. Keep the giver. We don't know what to start.
time lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
I would not run from the Holocaust. I would not run from the bomb. I'd welcome the chance to meet my maker and fly into the sun.
21 past the hour. So don't forget to please sign up for the Malloy podcast. We have a new Malloy's Uncensored mailbag that went off to our webmaster today, and it should be up hopefully tomorrow. Reading from one of the more insane, nasty emails that we get.
They're so nice. Well, I know it'll be up this week. I wouldn't promise tomorrow, just okay. Because there's so many other little tweaky things that have to be done on the site. But
and also, we have laid down the voice tracks, and I think tomorrow the music tracks and then the sound effects for the first real episode. Actually, it'll be the second one, but the first real episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players, written by Bob Alexander. So that script is... is, as we say in the in the production business, man, it's in the can. No, they say that in the film business, right? So the first several of those are going to be up on the website, and they're yours. As they become more elaborate, we are going to move them into the subscriber section of the website. So the object here is to hook you and then snatch it away from you so you have to pay a quarter to get all of this.
Shh, don't tell them our master plan.
Well, you know, I've got to be honest.
We're going to put them up in the subscriber area anyway, just so subscribers who wanted to hear them again could download them and whatever.
Yeah,
so
but they'll be in the free section for a while.
Correct.
And then eventually, very quickly eventually, because, you know, it's a lousy liberal trick to separate you from 25 cents, and we will stop at nothing to get your quarter, okay?
Much like payphones. Are there payphones left anywhere? I was thinking this the other day. For a quarter, what can you buy for a quarter? Because I'm thinking, you know, what can you buy for a quarter?
This program.
Other than this program, what can you buy for? You can't even make, I think phone calls had gone up to 35 cents anyway, and I don't think they're payphones anymore, are there? They're not any around here.
Well, we live out in East Jesus, Georgia, so, you know, it's very seldom we get daylight out here. All right, so do sign up. We look for your continuing support of this program, and not through donations. We don't have fundraisers here. We don't tell you you'll get a free set of CDs for every $50 contributor, or that's what they do at least the NPR station here. This is honest to God. You know, the show is always going to be free to you. You can listen anytime, however you do it. Listen online, listen on your iPhone, listen. Phone show is going to be free, right?
Phone show
streaming, internet streaming, your radio station. Sirius XM, of course, you have to subscribe to Sirius XM, but the program itself is there for the asking. So that will always be available. The subscription area is for the iPod for people who don't want to listen to this program or can't from 9 to midnight Eastern time, and also who want to eliminate commercial messages and just have straight ahead Malloy program for the time each show less the commercials.
I was going to say the commercial-free part.
Yeah, there you go. All right, back to phone calls. David, David is calling from Atlanta, listening online. David, welcome to the program.
Yes. Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
The reason I'm calling is as a disaffected Democrat, I believe that the fiscal policies that this administration is currently pursuing are going to shipwreck the finances of this nation.
Aren't we already there? We're already shipwrecked.
Well, yeah, I guess you might say that. But I think that he's basically handing this country a lock, stock, and barrel over to the international bankers, and they're basically looting the American taxpayer and the Treasury. And
well,
our children and grandchildren are going to have to pay for that.
Well, I think it's amounts that are unpayable. Children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, out to the seventh generation, I don't think it can ever be paid back. I think what will happen is, and you and I may not live to see this, but some sort of a cancellation of debt or the ending of the dollar or going back to the barter system or hunting food with clubs. I'm not sure what, but I don't think there's any international bankers involved here. I think these are American companies, mostly U.S. and U.K., where everything is hidden in Switzerland. But I don't think it's necessarily international bankers. We've got world class thieves, liars, and con artists right here. I'm shocked at the attitude that Barack Obama and Timothy Geithner are taking. I don't get this.
I do. Mr. Geithner is the former president of the New York Federal Reserve.
Right, right.
The Federal Reserve is essentially a private bank. It is not federal. They're printing trillions of dollars out of thin air. And I guess, you know what that happens whenever you expand the money supply. And I'm not an economist, but that definitely causes...
Inflation, if I'm not right,
and the money supply,
and given the situation that we're dealing with, we wind up with deflation. It's a mess, David. I hear you, man, loud and clear. I've got to leave it there. I hope we talk again. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles from the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard rain's gonna fall.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is about 25 before the hour on the Malloy program. Or every place else, too, as a matter of fact. Russ is calling from Buffalo, New York, listening on XM. Russ, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, thanks.
Sure.
I got a theory on 9/11, what actually happened that day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I went to the site 9/11.org, or 9/11truth.org, Pilots for 9/11 Truth, and I saw a story there about the plane that Pennsylvania, they were interviewing the first responders to the plane.
Right.
And the first responders said that there was no blood, there was no body part, there was nothing there that was happening, that there was nothing there at the crash site. And I immediately I think it's got to be a remote plane. Then I dug up that remember that golfer, that pro guy, his name escapes me right now, but.
Yeah, the one whose plane just kept going and going
right,
and going.
Right. They didn't
right.
know where it was going to come down or nothing.
Right.
After that, I think that they put remote controls. I think that they made a rule, FAA or something, that if something happened to the plane or the pilots or occupants, that they could land the plane. And they put remote controls in these airplanes. And that's what they took over. It had to be a conspiracy. It had to be an inside job.
Well, the golfer that you're referring to, I'm drawing a blank on his name too. After that occurred, of course, Russ, it would be impossible to retrofit every single airplane in the United States with something like what you're talking about. But thanks, Russ. I understand the. Your suspicions about it. I have not brought up the 9/11 situation very much at all. It's still, to me, it's still wide open. Whenever a new development occurs, like this Professor Stephen Jones publishing a paper that shows there was explosive involved in the debris, anyway, of, was it the number 7 tower, number 1 tower, number 2 tower? I don't really think it makes a whole lot of difference which tower. As these developments manifest, yeah, you know, I'll bring it up. But we could begin tonight having people on who would make the case that what occurred on September 11th, 2001, was entirely different from the way it has entered into the collective consciousness now, for the most part. 19 hijackers using phony IDs, in some cases real IDs, and box cutters defeated the most sophisticated military-industrial establishment in the history of the human race, and then did what they did. And that, you know, after the debris cleared, or once the debris was being checked through, one of the possibly apocryphal stories was that the ID card of one of the hijackers was found in the debris at Ground Zero. You know, just on and on and on. I've read as much as I could until I finally gave up. I hope the truth will out. I really do, whatever the truth is. I've said more times than probably is healthy for this program that I do not accept the official story of what occurred that day. I don't know what occurred. I've listened to and read as many theories about what happened that day as I can, and I'm, you know, usually they bring me back to square one in my own belief, and that is that what did occur that day is not the official story. There's a couple of things I'm still waiting for, and I'm sorry to laugh. It's the laughter of somebody who just feels reality slipping very quickly out of his grasp. But I'm waiting to see just one photo, just one, or one piece of video from all those cameras that surrounded the Pentagon that shows the jetliner slamming into the Pentagon. If someone, anyone, I don't care if you're conservative, liberal, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, black, white, or from Mars, I don't care if somebody, somewhere, would just provide one single frame from a film, or one single scan of a digital recording, or one single photograph, or one image of that jetliner hitting the Pentagon, I would just be forever grateful. I really would, because then that would set to rest a huge part of my doubt where it concerns the official story. I would still have to deal with what occurred in New York and what occurred in Pennsylvania. But at least that would settle the Pentagon part, that it actually was hit by a commercial jetliner. So if you have access to such a piece of video or film or a still from all those scores of cameras, okay, scores, dozens, ten, I don't know how many cameras there were, but I will guarantee you that at the very throbbing heart of the military industrial complex, the command center of imperialist America, the Pentagon, that there were more cameras trained on that building on that day and every day than any other site on Earth, bar none. And yet, not one single photo, piece of video, or piece of film that actually shows a jetliner hitting that building seems to be available. And my question is just, to me, it's a question based in pure, cold, hard logic. And that question is, why not? Why is there not any visual evidence that such a collision occurred? I saw the planes hitting the World Trade Center towers. But as far as the Pentagon, and I saw that, the second one anyway, by virtue of live television coverage. But where it concerns the Pentagon, I mean, can anyone explain that? If you think all the people who refuse to accept the official story about 9/11, do you not understand, if you're in that camp, do you not understand that one simple piece of photographic evidence of a jetliner hitting the Pentagon would just silence so many people that apparently are irritating you? You being, you know, people who say, look, you know, come on, stop the tinfoil hat crap. What occurred, occurred, and it occurred the way the government said it occurred. Okay. Then where is that one tiny bit of forensic evidence in the form of a video, piece of film, or a photograph that shows that jetliner hitting the Pentagon? Surely it exists, if it happened, right? Wouldn't it have to exist? Is there a square inch of the Pentagon that is not under constant, unending video surveillance? Is there? I don't know. I'm asking. I'm just saying that the very beating heart, the center of the universe of American imperialism and the military-industrial complex, is it possible or probable to believe that that edifice would not be covered? Every inch of its exterior surface? Is that a ridiculous? Or satellite coverage? Constant pictures being taken from above, from below, from the sides, from around, from underneath, from every conceivable angle? We're not talking about a local high school or a military post or a diplomatic building. We're talking about the heart of the military-industrial complex. Is it rational to believe that a jetliner could hit it and there's no photographic evidence? Is that rational? I don't know anymore. We'll be right back.
In Florida, colored pens and for sexing up the I'm the someone who knew. They're not telling pre-September. I lean on in the loop to help them unremember.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
There's a verse missing out of this song.
Misinformation.
Everything you know is wrong.
Ten before the hour. Thanks to our engineer, Kathy Bay. Our technical advisor is Ben Birch, military affairs correspondent Sharon Gordy. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf provide ethical advice to the program. Bruce Enberg is our economic correspondent, and the executive producer also is Catherine Bay. Back to your calls here. Jack is listening on XM, driving in Nevada. Hey, Jack.
Hi, Mike. I'm actually from Minnesota. One of the people really proud of our Michelle Bachman. There's a video. If you can imagine this.
Yeah.
There's a video of her 2-3 years ago. There was a protest at our Capitol. I think it was a gay rights protest. A video of her on her hands and knees in the bushes spying on the protest. And the reason I called is because you're making an appeal for somebody to turn up the video. It'd be great if that thing got on TV, you know, Rachel Maddow or Oberman's show or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that a couple months ago, this is a little more serious. A couple months ago, I heard that the Obama administration's approach to some of the illegal Bush rulings, specifically mm-hmm. the NSA wiretap, was to defend against litigation, perhaps by the Civil Liberties Union or whoever, in court, and bring it all the way to the Supreme Court to establish a precedent that the government is wrong in assuming that it can do those things. I'm not sure where I heard that, Mike, but I know that I did. I'm not a Obama apologist. And,
well, that, you know, that what you're saying, Jack, kind of dovetails with my ever weakening theory that Obama is really doing rope-a-dope on these fascists, and that, yeah, where it concerns the NSA surveillance, he wants it to go to the Supreme Court, so a ruling would come that says the executive branch can't do this. Forever and ever, world without end, amen. So you may, you know, I hope you're right. I
certainly do too. And it would certainly be, I mean, given Obama's legal background and his intelligence, it would certainly be a great approach to the problem rather than him come out and dictate that this shall not happen anymore until the next Republicans get in office and say it's going to happen. If instead he establishes legal precedent in the Supreme Court that that the government can't do it, mm-hmm. the administration can't, would be a much better determination.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, your logic there is flawless. The only fly in the ointment that I see is the fact that didn't Obama, as a senator, vote to immunize the telecom companies. In other words, he voted along with the Bush crime family that they should have retroactive immunity from prosecution. Now, I forget when the vote was taken. If it was taken after it became clear that he, Obama, was going to be the Democratic candidate for president, then maybe that would fit into some sort of plan to let this go to the Supreme Court. If it occurred before he got the nomination, I think his supporters would have said, "What the hell are you doing?" and stepped back. So if he did, he did vote in favor of giving them retroactive immunity. I assume then it was after he had pretty much secured the nomination.
I think that it was before, and because I recall being about as mad about that. Being a supporter, about as mad about that as in his first debate
mm-hmm.
when he promised to bomb Pakistan if necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
yeah.
There's definitely some things about his actions that are very disappointing. That was one of them. Who knows? The vote might have been already determined. You know how the senators do that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They count noses, and he voted in favor of it. You know, just because it was a done deal. I'm not sure. It was very disappointing. I know that.
Yeah. Well, I'm so tired of speculating. I'm so tired of holding my breath and thinking, well, this is part of the overarching Obama plan that he's going to let these right-wing bastards hang themselves. He's not going to be the one to step up with the noose in his hands. He's going to leave it up to them. And one of the ways they can hang themselves on this deal is to let it go to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court rules, nope, can't do that. But the Supreme Court, you know, let's remember the composition of the Supreme Court. It is about as close to being a fascist branch of government as any government is right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I hope you're right. I hope it's part of what I've been referring to as the Muhammad Ali tactic of rope-a-dope. You know, let your opponent just flail himself until he's out of breath, and then just tap him on the chin, and he's out like a light. I hope that's the situation, man. I really do.
Yes. Let me say one more thing about...
Okay, we have about 20 seconds here.
Yes. Because he fancies himself an intellectual, and he likes to answer questions by the press, he takes all questions. I think he's much more susceptible to pressure from both liberal radio and from the population and from the press.
Mm-hmm.
Because he does answer. I mean, Bush didn't even hear it, of course, and the rest of them lied. But Obama likes to answer every question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think pressure from the people and from the press will make a difference.
Well,
it'll get through to them.
Again, I hope you're right. Hey, listen, thanks, Jack.
Yep.
All right, man. Appreciate you checking in. That's it from us for tonight. If I did get your call, I do apologize, but we will see you, so to speak, tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.